My name is Daniel Shoptaw, an Arkansas accountant with a love for the Cardinals. I spent a lot of years watching the game before deciding to write about it. Now I express my thoughts and opinions at C70 at the Bat, part of the Cardinal Conclave. His name is Dan Buffa, a former Busch Stadium scoreboard operator with a passion for the game. His writing talents can be found throughout the internet on a variety of topics, including movies and anything St. Louis. You'll find him often bleeding out words at stlouissportsminute.com. Every week, we pool our knowledge and our opinions to create this podcast. Together, we are the best Dans in baseball. Welcome to episode 27 of Best Dans in Baseball. I'm Daniel Shoptaw. That's Dan Buffa. We are recording this Saturday, March 26th, right before Easter. I hope you've had a good Easter weekend. A lot of people had spring break this week. I hope it's been a good one. Hope you'll make it out to church tomorrow for Easter Sunday. We are also within about a week of the Cardinals opening the 2016 season. And there's a few, you know, there's things going on in camp.
Mr. Shoptaw, I gotta say, if we're gonna start linking up these podcasts with player numbers, it's 27 is Johnny Peralta. We need to make sure we don't hurt our thumbs during this podcast, okay? Just going to put out a disclaimer. I think I'm going to start doing that. I'm going to look for each number. This week it's Johnny Peralta. So we need to just check our health when we're doing this podcast.
Yeah,
just be safe.
We have to be careful. I remember the old Joe Sports Fan podcast, which lasted almost a year. But they did. They tied. That was the way they named their podcast, was to tie it to uniform numbers of not just Cardinals, but anybody in St. Louis. So that was,
well, you know, last week it was Mr. O. Next week it's going to be Tommy Pham. So, yeah.
Yeah, so we are going to have to dodge the gauntlet of things. Just mentioning Tommy Pham's name may have him hurt.
My leg just tightened.
Yeah, so. All right, well, let's see. What do we want to start with? I guess we can start with the fact that, well, you know, honestly, this has been a kind of not-so-pleasant spring with the things on the field. And I know it's spring training, and I know I saw you have an interaction today.
Yes, we did. I did.
About that. But, you know, the Cardinals have won one game. Oh, my goodness. They have won one game in the last 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And no matter if it's, I mean, they've tied three of those games. I mean, it is spring training. You take all that with the grain of salt. But, you know, even Mike Matheny has said he was aiming for a 500 or plus record in the spring, and that doesn't look like they're going to get there. You'd like to say, oh, they're going to flip a switch and come April 3rd, everything's just going to go full bore, and you do have the right players and stuff to go together, but there's got to be at least a little bit of concern with basically a two-week losing streak.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I can try to play it down, I mean, you know, you are getting really close to the season, and you like to just see more run production. But, you know, the last spring or so, I don't really think they hit a lot either. I don't know what it is. I don't know if these guys are just kind of going through the motions. They're going to turn it on when they get to the season, but you like to see, especially in this last week, some run production, just some hits and some good performances. The pitching's been decent. I mean, at least from the starters. I mean, they haven't gotten rocked, so that you take the good where you can get it. But yeah, as far as just, you know, people just hitting the plate, you haven't seen that much. And you know, like, if you're like me, you just try to ride out the idea that, okay, it's spring training, we're going to score at least two runs a game when it gets to be April 3rd. But you know, it's a legitimate concern if this kind of goes to the end of next week and Thursday when the games stop, and you know, and we're still not hitting at all, and the regulars are kind of starting to play, then you know, you really kind of get a little worried. I mean, you got to think about how many games have the regulars actually played at least the majority of the game, and how many times have they actually gotten out there to play. And you know, for me, I just hope when they go into Pittsburgh on April 3rd, that they bring their bats somewhat. I mean, I don't think I'm expecting. I'm not trying to expect too much of a breakout. I want to think they're going to be different this year, but I think it may be another season where they just try to, you know, average three, you know, 3.5 runs a game. But you just hope that in this last week of play, they just start to generate some, kind of start putting some good performances together.
Yeah, you look at this team, and in spring training, it's one of those things where you don't want to get too excited about things, but some of that is you don't want to, you know, these overinflated stats, you don't want to say, oh, they're going to hit 400 for the year. Well, that's not the problem with the Cardinals. Cardinals have hit 14 home runs on the spring. Factor that in with the Detroit Tigers, who lead the majors with 38. I mean, that's a pretty good difference. You know, now the Cardinals aren't the worst team, and in fact, their counterparts in Jupiter, the Miami Marlins, are. They've only hit 9 this year, so maybe it's some park effects. I think I saw something today, this week, that maybe John Mabry was blaming the wind a little bit. I saw it referenced on Twitter. I never actually saw what his comments were, and maybe there's been some weather issues too. But when you've got an offense that you're already worried about, an offense that has seemingly been allergic to going yard for the last couple of years, seeing them, you know, have a team leader, you know, Randall Grichuk has 2, and then you've got 2 guys in Hazelbaker and Pagero that most likely aren't going to make the team. Hazelbaker keeps making this run like he's going to, but most likely both of those guys aren't making the team. Your team, you know, your league leader, your team leader has 2 home runs on the spring. That's tough.
Yeah, I mean, it is. And, you know, and this is where I'll reference, and, you know, the fierce defenders of Mazzella will say it's not a big deal, but this is where I reference bringing a guy in the offseason. This is where, you know, you lose out on Hayward. You know, there were guys out there to get. I know they cost a lot of money. I know, I mean, for one thing, Chris Davis, the money he got was just ridiculous. So as much as we like power, and I kind of flirted with the aspect of bringing him in, he was crazy. You know, Cespedes, I keep thinking about the deal he got from the Mets, because as much as you want to worry about defense, you know, as you just pointed out, and what the trend of this spring in the last 2 years are, is this offense doesn't have a – and me, you know, Matt Whitner, Cheap Seat, and I, we referenced this on that podcast, on that UCB radio, the night the Cardinals got eliminated. It's burned into my memory. I was sitting in a movie theater parking lot, but that's what I do when the Cardinals get eliminated. I go watch movies and just kind of – I jump into land and make-believe. But, you know, I think I subbed in and did a podcast with – I subbed in for Tara. I think he did it with Matt. And we were just discussing, like, one thing he has to go out and get. And this is before, of course, you know, Hayward made his decision and they lost out on Bryce. You know, this team doesn't have a knockout punch in that lineup. You can think that Grichuk might be that if he develops and he stays healthy, or Matt Carpenter – if you hit lower in line, but the Cardinals don't have a true cleanup guy. They don't have a knockout punch, and that's why I thought if you don't get Hayward, well, you know, you might have to go get somebody like Cespedes, especially if his price wasn't that much. And I know that they obviously didn't like him that much, but now you're seeing when you lose a guy like Peralta, who wasn't an offensive juggernaut, but he's just a very important cog in your lineup, at least the way the Cardinals play him. And you got questions at first base. Who's going to play first base? You know, can the outfield? You got Tommy Pham, who's now said his contacts don't work. So now he's literally back to half-blind Tommy Pham, or just okay vision Tommy Pham. Colton Wong had a knee contusion today. You know, Yachty, I don't think we can expect much from him offensively. So you're kind of like looking around the lineup and you go, well, guys, you know, spring training can be bad, but I'm not sure what to expect from these guys even in the season, because they didn't do anything in the offseason. They got Jed Jerko. They kind of cleaned out the bench a little bit, but when they didn't get a Cespedes and Upton, I mean, when they didn't go out and get a, you know, an offensive guy to help that especially the outfield depth, I mean, there is a reason for concern. I think that's something you're going to have to look for in the first month or two when you don't have Peralta, if the Cardinals get hit with another injury, you know, and then they lose somebody else file, you're going to have to really see how this team can adjust. Guys like Brandon Moss are going to really come to the forefront. Can he kind of change things? Can Matt Holliday become more of a force? Does Mike Matheny, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks into the season, pull the trigger and move Matt Carpenter down the lineup? But it's just one of those things where I think you're seeing a product of what did happen in the off season.
Yeah, and you know, we've talked about it a lot this winter, that we said there are some ifs, there are some things that they're banking on, and they're not unreasonable things. I mean, you know, they're kind of banking on Piscotty being for real. They're kind of banking on Grichuk bringing the power. They're kind of banking on Matt Holliday being healthy. They're banking on Brandon Moss being farther away from the hip injury. They're banking on Yadier Molina being healthy. They're banking on, you know, numerous things like that. And like I said, none of them are really unreasonable. They're not expecting, you know, Stephen Piscotty to hit 400 or anything of that nature. they'll take it, but they're not expecting that. But when you start putting all those together, it's almost like all those ifs have to break the Cardinals' way. Now, you know, maybe one or two can go against them and they don't get that turned out. Maybe Matt Holliday's health is the issue. Maybe, you know, Grandel Grichuk isn't quite as established as we'd like to think. But, you know, every time an if goes the wrong way, it becomes even that much more difficult for this team to win or put up runs. Now, again, this is a team that even on its best, even if all the ifs go the Cardinals' way, they're winning games 4-3. I mean, and then that's fine because it's off of this pitching staff, as dominant as it was last year, should be in that ballpark. They're probably not going to be as good as they were last year just because it was record-setting. But they're good pitchers. You get Adam Wainwright back all year. You've got a starting five that's very good. You've got a bullpen that's pretty shut down. So even at best, this is not going to be a slug 'em out offense. But you know we've sat through a lot of 3-2 games, a lot of games where the other team gets up 2-0 in the first, and you're like, well, we're done tonight. you know, and it's tough to go through that again. You know, I know that there's money available, you know, for a trade later in the year, but, you know, I also don't think that a trade at the trade deadline, which is about the time Mo wants to make deals, he doesn't tend to make deals in June, he doesn't tend to make deals in May, he makes deals within a week of the trading deadline, and I don't know, you know, where the Cardinals stand if they have to wait that long to make a move. Memphis doesn't seem to be the option this year like it was last year to fit some holes. There's some question marks. Now, again, I'm not saying that they're going to be a team that doesn't win the division. A bad year for the Cardinals is 85 wins, I think, and, you know, lots of teams would just, you know, scream their heads off to do that. So I'm not saying this is even a team that's not going to win the division, but, you know, it's going to be a grind, I think, most likely.
It is. I mean, and this team, I told STL Cards today, I said, you know, John Mozeliak builds these teams on pitching. He builds these teams on, you know, great pitching depth. You know, if we can't score runs, we're just going to up-pitch the other team. And really, well, last year the Cardinals missed an injury or two, and we may have went deeper in the playoffs. If you had a fully calibrated Adam Wainwright, if you had a Carlos Martinez in there, you know, Jaime Garcia didn't have the flu or whatever he had. You know, ate some bad food, you know, got nervous, whatever he did. But, you know, the Cardinals, I mean, they hinge a lot of their firepower on pitching. I mean, they're starting to draft a little more into hitting wise in the draft, but this last offseason really showed that he's not a guy that's going to go out there and just shove out money for an offensive guy. He wants to get a guy like Hayward who's as much of a defensive guy as he is an offensive guy. You know, you think about the last long-term deal he gave was to Holliday. He was definitely, you know, past his big power days. He just he gets these guys like, you know, Matt Carpenter and Biscotti who are going to hit a lot of doubles, get on base, maybe hit some home runs. They might surprise you there. But, you know, it's just kind of a, you know, get on base and then, you know, merry-go-round, keep him moving around. But he's a really big pitching guy. It's just what he is. You see this team. I think the rotation's better. I think their bullpen's better. But there's going to be games where the Cardinals, you know, if they get down 5-0 early, like you said, we're just going to start kind of counting. They're like, okay, are we going to come back tonight? You know, but, I mean, maybe that's the best way. There's a guy on Twitter I talked to today who was just like, you know, I think the season's going to be crap, and I'm not even going to watch. And I'm like, well, first thing is that's not going to happen. We can all say we're not going to watch. We're going to be watching. But low expectations may be the thing. I mean, if you're not really believing in this offense, but I just think that when it comes to Mozeliak and the way he builds teams, it's always going to be pitching first. He's not going to go out and, you know, get a murderer's row of hitters. That doesn't mean that he's never going to spend. It doesn't mean that, especially when that TV money really kicks in, that he is going to go out and, you know, throw his chips on the table for a guy like Bryce Harper if he seems like he wants to get out of Washington, or if Giancarlo wants to opt out of Miami. If there's another big guy, or potentially, you know, if there's a spot for a guy, if Holliday departs and Piscotty doesn't get into left field, and there's a chance of bringing a new guy, he's been known to make that kind of trade. It just doesn't happen as often as fans would like. I mean, even this past offseason, when Hayward went away, we're like, okay, well, he's just going to go get somebody else, and it just never happened. Even I thought that he was going to go, you know, I think Mozeliak's going to react and make a big deal. He's going to prove us wrong. He's going to go out and go, well, you know, if I can't get the guy I wanted, Hayward, I'm going to go out and maybe fix the offense and get an offensive power of a guy. But he didn't, and that just tells you that this is a guy that sticks to his guns. You're never going to see John Mozeliak sweat. He just doesn't do it because he assembles his pitching staff. It's very deep. He knows that he's got Wainwright back. He knows that he's got, you know, a more mature, you know, Carlos Martinez. He's got Waka coming back. These guys aren't being asked to be the ace this year. And he's got a lot of questions in his lineup. I think he's just got too many questions for fans to be able to handle, especially when you got potentially four guys at first base. And you got your second baseman's now got a knee injury. And, you know, and you missed your shortstop's gone. And what happens if your third baseman goes down? Then it just kind of, and you know, on the farm, there's not really a ton of this, okay, this guy's going to come up and just start hitting like crazy like Grichuk and Piscotty. So there's a lot of reason to be worried. I mean, if I don't get really worried about spring training, trust me, if it, 2 weeks into the season, the Cardinals are averaging about a run and a half per game, you're going to see Twitter get lit on fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not a pleasant thing, there's no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I think people, even myself this past offseason, are like, okay, maybe he'll change and move off the Hayward mess by getting a big offensive guy, and he didn't. He just sticks to his guns, Mozeliak.
Yeah, and there's something to, I mean, obviously he's been successful. This is, you know, the pattern of things. This is the way things go, and that's understandable. But, you know, there's going to come a time when you've got to do something, and whether that time is now or not, that's a different situation. And hopefully that when he can recognize when there is a time to do something, he'll do it before it's, you know, past due.
I mean, it might happen this July. I mean, if this team is struggling and we're in like a death match with like the Cubs and the Pirates, like if we're right there even within five games, you might see him go out there and peruse the market for a big bat. And if it means shaking the lineup up, he might do it. Because, I mean, he did it. You know, I mean, he did it for pitching when he went out and got Lackey. But if he has to really go out and get a bat, I mean, you may see it this July. If the team is close and they're hurting on offense, I think he's going to have to. Because if he stands pat, let's just kind of do a hypothetical. If they're not hitting in the July and their pitching's once again holding them afloat, he has to make a move. I mean, you have to.
You would think.
I mean, Peralta will be back by then, but I don't think anybody's going to go Peralta. Okay, buddy, you're our savior.
No, I
don't. Now, as far as like maybe adding more, a little more levity to your lineup, you know, Peralta can help there. But I mean, when he comes back, he's almost going to have a whole like spring training, a whole like, you know, get back in the swing of things.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to take a while. I mean, you know, we've seen what Yachty did, trying to do it on the fly. And we're probably going to see that a little bit too, because Yachty looks like he's going to be ready for opening day, but I still don't think we're necessarily expecting a whole lot of offense. And we can't expect a whole lot of offense out of Yachty anyway. I mean,
we're not.
And it's been 3 or 4 years now since he's had a big, strong offensive year. But so we will see. Yeah, Peralta can't be, you know, he's not going to come in and start, you know, hit 20 home runs in the second half of the year. That's just not going to happen. So, you know, we hopefully, you know, don't need that. Now, I guess if you want to look at the silver lining of spring training, it's the fact that, boy, the Cubs are 8-16. They don't seem to be too concerned. So, you know, I haven't seen their fans get all worked up. They're still on that giddy, we're going to win the whole thing cloud.
Hey, man, they've made T-shirts that they want, that, you know, something about targets. I don't know. Joe Madden is trying everything to be the most coolest manager, even though from my vantage point, he just really looks annoying.
Well, and that's the key. I mean, the key is winning. I mean, if you win, you're loose, you're keeping people calm.
Yeah.
If you lose, you're not focused enough, you're not paying attention enough to the game, you're not taking it. I mean, and that's what it sounds like to me. It's going to be a very informal, I don't want to say, I say unprofessional, and I don't say that as a negative thing, just not like a, you know, the professional like you expect with the Cardinals, where you've got the schedule, you've got to be dressed right, you've got to do all this. That's not going to be the Cubs this year. And, you know, maybe it's going to work, but it feels like it's not going to have the discipline that they need.
Yeah.
Maybe we're grasping at straws, hoping that something's going to happen, but it just doesn't sit right with us.
It just feels like, you know, it's like that stern. The Cardinals kind of feel like, you know, no matter how hard they try, they're kind of like the military stern presence. Because I just think they take the model of their manager, Mike Matheny. Mike Matheny to me looks like a soldier. He's very, you know, he's very classy. He's respectful. He's not going to take shots, but he's tough. You know, he stands up for his players. He's been there before. And then you got Joe Madden, who's just kind of like, you know, basically the Joker, mm-hmm. you know, and his band of young, cool guys. I mean, they're all, you know, they're young, they're trendy, they're all on Twitter. I don't even think Mike Matheny even knows what 140 characters means.
Oh, he's got a Twitter account.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. He does.
But he's got one.
Man, okay. I mean, okay, he's proved me wrong. But I just think of it as, like, this is going to be a perfect collision of, you know, stern professionals / old guys, and then against the young, kind of hip and cool crew. I mean, it's going to really make for, as much as I want to be weary about the offense and about what's going to happen, this is just going to be a really fun year. I always tell people that whenever they ask me what's going to happen or what your predictions are. Like, predictions are, like, I can tell you the predictions for the first month. I can't tell you what this race is going to look like in September. It's just these teams are so, they're all so well built. You know, the Pirates and the Cubs and the Cardinals. I think you're going to see another thing where one of them wins the division. You might see two of them in the wild card, but it's going to be a fun ride. And you look at the schedule, as we said before we started the podcast, you know, the Cubs come into town on the 18th. I mean, it starts up right away. I mean, less than 3 weeks into the season, they come into town. Hayward comes back. You know, they should just have a Royal Rumble in the field. It'll be a shoving contest, but really just let them go on the field and then get all that angst out. The Cardinals get to use crutches. You know, the Cubs get slingshots. I mean, you know, it's just whatever, you know. The Cubs get to, you know, throw old-style beer cans at the Cardinals. Cardinals can respond with Budweiser. It's going to be a fun year of baseball because nobody knows how it's going to end. I mean, everybody can pick the Cubs, but it's a cool pick. I mean, even everybody's kind of forgetting about the Pirates and the Mets, but – you know, it's going to be a fun season because, once again, you have three teams in the Central that are going to be fighting for it. I can't really tell you. I mean, when people ask me what's going to happen, I can't tell you. I mean, it's just, it depends on who hits more and really who has the better pitching. Because I still think when the Cardinals, at the end of the day, they have the best pitching of all the three teams when it comes to bullpen and rotation.
It would seem like. Yeah, just looking at the records, you know, we keep talking about the NL Central being the best division. Cardinals are 8-12. The Cubs are 8-16. The Pirates are 7-17. The Reds are 11-15. And the Brewers are 12-10. I mean, you know,
the Brewers. Yeah, so
you take your spring training records and yeah, we've said this. You take some of that stuff and you put more than a grain of salt with it, but. It's still a little bit interesting to see that the Diamondbacks are 20-4 and the Nationals are 16-4, and those are two.
Oh man, Tony La Russa! I mean, whatever he did, it's paying off, folks. I mean, they are having a great spring.
And honestly, I would not be terribly surprised. I mean, I'm not making predictions, and if I was, I would probably still pick the Mets in that division. But it wouldn't be too surprising now that the Nationals don't have that focus on them, that they don't have this idea that they're going to go out and win everything and they're not acting like they're going to go out and win everything, that they might, you know, actually go out and win everything. I mean, they keep talking about this for years, and they got the talent. So.
Yeah, it's funny. The Cardinals, you know, I mean, looking at their record, we must have had a really good start, I guess. We are 8-12. People make it sound like we're like, you know, 2-20. But, you know,
it
feels like it. I guess just lately, because we're not really hitting lately, I guess.
Yeah.
But, hey man, the darn Kansas City Royals are 12-16.
They won.
You got Atlanta, man, 6-16. No, I mean they need to do something down there. Well, okay, this is getting ridiculous.
What they're doing is rebuilding and get ready.
Rebuilding.
To try to be the.
But they're not trading Freddie Freeman for the 1700th time.
Well, I mean, and to be fair, they don't really have much need to. You know, I mean, whether they could get prospects back or not, I don't know. But there's something to be said for keeping a face for marketing purposes, if nothing else. You know, that's the focus of these guys. They're, you know, they got to have a reason for some people to come to the ballpark, and Freddie Freeman can do that. Yeah, the Cardinals did start out pretty well. If you don't count that game against the college team, they went 1-2, 2-1, 2-2, 3-2, 4-2, 4-3, 4-4, and then 5-4, 6-4, 7-4 for the first 2 weeks. Before, you know, not doing anything the last 2 weeks. So, yeah, it is what it is. Now, on the pitching side of things, we have seen – we'll come back because I want to talk about Holiday and Moss and all that stuff. We'll do that in a little bit.
But, oh, yeah.
You know, we've seen Jordan Walden go down now with what they call a knot in his lat or something of that nature. There seems to be some concern there. You know, we've kind of been hoping that, you know, Walden's looked pretty good. We thought, okay, maybe the rest of the rehab is all worked out, and you get to dreaming a little bit about that bullpen. You know, what is it? I mean, is this a situation where we're just not going to see much out of him? I keep thinking about that, you know, that 2-year contract that they signed to him, and he, you know, had a month of it, and it kind of reminds me of the Jason Mott contract where he, you know, signed a 2-year deal, was out with the surgery for, you know, a year, and by the time he got good, it was time for him to leave. So, is Walden going to be that way, or are we going to see some of him?
You know, it's with him, it's just, I mean, he has such a very tricky injury that, you know, you almost can't really put a lot of stock in him coming back until you actually see him on the field, see him in a real game, and, you know, get some innings in, because it just, the injury he had, it had the Cardinals thinking if he was even going to come back at all. So when it comes to Jordan Walden, I wouldn't really get my hopes up until you really see him back in motion, pitching on back-to-back days, and that arm and shoulder can handle it.
Yeah, and unfortunately, like they said, I was reading an article before we got online here, off of Post-Dispatch. Cardinals wanted to throw him back-to-back days this week.
Oh, okay.
And with this setback, they're probably not going to get a chance to. And this seems to be a situation where Walden may start the year on the DL. If so, that may leave a spot for this Matt Bowman, who's the Rule 5 guy that the Cardinals took from the Mets. They've got to keep him on the roster all year long, or they have to offer him back to the Mets for half the price that they paid for him. They seem to be really still interested in having him be this long man, be a guy that can come into games, maybe low-leverage situations. We've talked, the way we've talked about things throughout the winter, there just didn't seem to be room for him, but if Walden goes on the DL, a lot of the other guys like Tulavala or Sokolovich, I think, still have options. You know, maybe you put a Bowman there at least for a couple weeks, see what you get, and then when Walden's healthy, you start trying to figure out from there what goes on.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's 24 years old. He's had a good spring. I mean, you know, he's got the kind of stuff, I guess, that can go. Is he kind of a reliever slash starter? I don't really know too much about him. Can he go both ways, or is he more of a reliever?
I think, let me pull it up, but I think he was a starter in the minor league, so he probably could do both. I mean, like they said, they're looking for that long man to come in and do a couple innings here and there, kind of like what Tyler Lyons may be doing for them. So, you know, I think he has had some, let me pull this up.
He's mainly
a starter. Yeah. He's been a starter pretty much his whole entire minor league career. I'm looking at it, he's pretty much only had a few games in relief. But, you know, that's kind of what it was like at Adam Wainwright. You know, he was a starter until he came up and was that middle innings guy.
And it's funny that they have to keep him on their 25-man roster all season in order to retain his rights. So he's a Rule 5 guy. So it kind of gets tricky. I mean, I don't know. I think if there's any doubts about Walden, I mean, there's with this stacked bullpen and guys like Bowman and even Sam Tuivasa, you know, I mean, guys that are just ready to come up and, you know, impress and do their job. I don't think there's any reason to push. I mean, we already have like 4 prototype closers in that bullpen. So, you know, if Mr. Walden can't go, I mean, there's no reason to rush him. It's kind of like the thing with Yachty before he kind of started swinging a bat and being fine. You just don't have to rush these guys. I mean, April is just, it's the first month of the season. You know, if Walden can be ready, because Walden's so important because, you know, he can be a C setup, he can close, he can do all kinds of things, he keeps hitters off balance. But there's no reason to rush him. I mean, if Bowman's a guy that you got to see what you got, I think you just ride with Bowman if there's any doubt. I mean, even like 10% of doubt about Walden, you just go with Bowman.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what they'll do. And, you know, they can always try to make a deal with the Mets, get his rights, and to be able to send him to the minors. But they can also, and you know, they could always find some sort of injury and DLing for the year too. But, you know, I think they want to see him pitch. And so if Walden goes down, then I think Bowman at least starts the year in St. Louis. Now he may not be there for very long. I think the last time they took a guy like that was, what was his name? I've forgotten now. He's the outfielder. Started ended with a Z. I can't remember.
Oh,
Eric Co. Oh, well. Anyway, for some reason, it seems like they let him go mid-season. And then he wound up signing back on with the Twins or something like that. I don't remember. But, and I could be completely misremembering that as well. I've slept a couple times since then. So, I just think that they'll probably do what they can. And I think that there's a pretty strong chance that Walden winds up on the DL and he winds up taking that spot for a couple of weeks. And we'll see what happens after that. And it's, they had that idea that at one time that Carlos Martinez, wasn't going to be, if he's going to be the fifth starter, which it looks like he's going to be, even though he's much better than pretty much everybody else. He won't be needed necessarily until that Cubs series that we were talking about 2 weeks in. So there's an idea that he could have started, on the DL or whatever and stayed down in extended spring training. But that, I haven't heard much about that. And the way Martinez has pitched, I don't think that would really be an option. But you could do something like that and keep Bowen for a couple of weeks that way too. But, it gets a little concerning when you hear Walden having injuries this late in the spring, and we're tired of this to some degree. I mean, we've had, it seems like you can't go a month nowadays.
A week? You have the Peralta thing, and now you have the Walden unsure. Now you have the Wong left with a knee. This is why I take spring training for granted or not, I think it's just too long. It can leave so much of a time for these players to get hurt. I wish they'd just shorten it a little bit.
Well, I mean, I think the pitcher, it's really for the pitchers more than anything.
Yeah,
just,
I guess,
just stretch that out and let them work their way gradually up to being ready for 5-6 innings. The hitters don't really need it. I mean, I think...
Yeah, I mean, not really. I mean, as far as getting in there and just kind of blowing the dust off and being, getting whatever... I mean, people are making kinks to their swing. That's different. But, mostly it's just the main guys just probably just want to get to the season.
Yeah. And, I mean, you got to make decisions on this stuff, but it's kind of silly to make some decisions on this just because it's, 25, 30 at-bats, and that's you're looking at two guys, and one guy might have gotten, robbed of a couple of hits, and that might be the difference in on him not going to North or whatever. So, I don't know. Also, Luke Weaver goes and breaks his wrist, runs into a teammate, 20 shagging balls. It was not his pitching hand, thankfully, but he's going to be in a cast for a month. Probably doesn't make too much of an impact. I mean, Weaver looked good in the spring, but he's also way down there. And I mean, he's not, I think, he maybe started Double-A this year, maybe. I don't know if he'd even do that. So it's not like we were probably going to see him this year anyway.
I think he was thriving in the Arizona Fall League, but he was in a Class A advanced last year. Yeah. So he's kind of he's going to open the season as a Double A in Springfield. So, that's kind of cool for us. Maybe we get a chance to see him this year.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting because it would seem to be, I don't know whether they're going to put Alex Reyes. I mean, will they start him at Double A?
I almost want to think when he first comes back, I think they'll probably give him a start there too, but you never know. Just the way that he impressed over the last part of the year, he didn't really get a lot of Arizona Fall League, though, did he?
Well, he got a few.
He got a few.
Halfway,
okay.
I think, if I remember right.
I would almost think that they're going to put him at Double A just for a start, just to see how his stuff looks, and then if he's good to go. But you never know. They might put him, since he had Luke Weaver there, they might just put him at they might give him at Triple A. I just think. I don't think they're going to rush him, so you might see him at Springfield. Let's just kind of hope for me and you. Let's hope we get a good. Let's hope we get a couple glimpses at Mr. Reyes before he launches up into the system.
It seems likely because he pitched 8 games in Springfield last year. It would see, and he pitched 4 in the Fall League. It would seem like not only to the fact that he does not necessarily mastered. Double A yet, but also, I mean, for what he did, I mean, he's on suspension. It seems unlikely that the Cardinals would say, okay, you're suspended, but when you're done, we're going to promote you. I think they would, in some regard, make him realize that, he's starting back where he was. He might not have otherwise, but this is kind of the punishment for getting suspended. There's some consequences to that, and I wouldn't be surprised. Now, who knows? Maybe they'll, and that may only be 2 or 3 starts, and if he's very, very good there, then maybe they'll go ahead and bump him up. But it seems to me that he'll start there. So that would be an interesting. I mean, he'll come back about the time that Weaver will, so then you'd have you know, those two guys in the double A rotation. It'd be kind of interesting, like you said, to watch that team a couple times. All right, let's go back to the offense a little bit, and let's talk about the fact that Matt Holliday's played a whole lot more first base than we expected. And, you know, again, we think we've talked about it before. This is when you want him to play first. You want him to learn in spring training instead of on the field, on the job. But it almost sounds like when you read some of the stories and you read between the lines a little bit, that Holliday may play there a lot more than we really thought.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that the team is starting to see an ability, I guess, to open up their outfield and get some young guys in there. I mean, especially if Tommy Pham needs the work there, give him some work out. And maybe, and for me, see, that when I keep preaching is if Holliday plays first base, I think that this really improves your outfield defense, because Grichuk can go to left. You can put Tommy Pham, who I think is just a better outfielder, maybe your best outfielder defensively out there. And in center field, you get Piscotty and right. It helps you out there, and also, like, it helps. It gets Pham looks. It gives, if somehow Hazel Baker or Baguero sneak on in the roster at any time this year, you can get them at bats out in left field. I just think it could be Holliday just kind of wanting to think about where he's going to, you know, if he's going to play three or four more years, he's going to have to make this kind of transition. And the Cardinals, they need some right-handed hitters at first base who can hit lefties, and because Moss and Adams can't. So, I mean, I don't think you're going to see him there a lot, but I think we're going to see him there a lot more than we thought. I mean, a lot more than we thought in, you know, November. I mean, this thing looked halfway realistic if they brought back Hayward. And then, you know, you'd have to kind of move things around because Piscotty might be in left. You might have to kind of put, you know, Holliday at first base. But when he signed with Chicago and the team didn't really make a big upgrade out there, I thought it was put to bed until, you know, February comes around, there he is. And March comes around, he's playing a lot of games. So I think you're going to see him there against lefties, and I think you're going to see him there if things start to go well. And, I mean, you may see him there more. I mean, if he can just handle himself adequately defensively, I mean, getting his bat in there against lefties especially would really help this team hit. And I think the Cardinals are kind of starting to turn that corner. I think they kind of took it into spring training as a what-if. And the way that he's kind of looked, you know, comfortable over there, he's made some nice plays. He hasn't looked horrible. You know, I mean, understand, you know, Chris Duncan wants to play defense for this team, so you know, I can't look that bad. But I just think they're looking at ways that, you know, to get him in there and get the other guys in there and see if they want to bring back, and they're looking in the future, if he's going to come back next year, the year after that, then, you know, you could see Holliday at first base if he gets really comfortable there. It wouldn't be outside the realm of possibility for him to play, you know, a decent amount at first base, especially if he looks more comfortable as he plays.
It's possible. I mean, and again, I think it gives flexibility, which is usually a good thing. You know, who knows what we will see out of those guys. And, you know, again, gives Tommy Pham a little bit more time to play. You know, Brandon Moss, you know, can play outfield as well. And it seems like that maybe, you know, maybe he's a little bit better out there. I don't know. I think it's going to be kind of interesting to see where everybody plays when Matheny writes out the lineup pretty much every day, and you all got a lot of options there. And since we did the show last, Ruben Tejada signed. We kind of talked about that last time. You know, we weren't really a surprise there. Tejada has looked okay, I think, so far. I don't think there's anything. I mean, again, he's not going to take over Peralta, and he's not going to lead the team in home runs. But for the most part, you know, I made an error, I think, today, but I think, like, everybody made at least one error today, it seemed like. He seemed okay so far, and I guess that's, you know, again, we got him for half of the Mets were going to pay for him. You know, Mets were going to pay three. We get him for $1.5 million. He's 5 for 14. I mean, he's got one double. He's got an RBI. You know, so far, so good.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's one of those players that just doesn't really generate a lot of excitement. He's just basically there for depth. He's played over 3,500 innings in his career at shortstop. He's not a great one. He's not even really, you know, above average. He's just kind of a guy who's going to be able to be plugged in, and that they're not really sure about Aledmys Diaz, if they don't want to overexpose Jed Jerko. Craig Garcia is basically a bench guy. He's just basically a person that they wanted to grab for depth, especially when he became really cheap. So I don't think you get your really hopes of him. I don't think you're going to look at Ruben Tejada and go, that guy's going to help us win games. I just think, you know, he's going to collect some hits, he's going to make some plays, and hopefully that's going to help the Cardinals bide some time until either Aledmys Diaz is ready or Johnny Peralta is coming back.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to. We can't expect much, but you got to have somebody out there to play, and it seemed better to have Jorko Jurco will be the backup guy, the guy that can play second base. And, you know, if, apparently if Wong is going to have some injury, which is still iffy. I mean, it sounds like it wasn't a big deal, but it's Cardinals and it's injuries and it's spring training, so we assume that it's a big deal until we know for sure. You know, if he's out for any length of time, then you want Jurco over there playing second. So, yeah, it was pretty much an obvious move. It was what kind of like the Mike Leake move. It was insurance. It wasn't anything fun or exciting, but a move that had to be done to kind of keep the boat afloat, and that seems to be what's going on. And who knows? You know, I mean, stranger things have happened than somebody coming over from another organization to St. Louis and, you know, having a career year. So it's not unheard of, but it's also to the point where the Cardinals can waive him if he doesn't handle it very well. And Peralta comes back, you can get rid of him if necessary and not lose a whole lot of money, which is a good thing. Mitch Harris out for 2 weeks. Some sort of nerve compression thing. Says it's not serious. It helps because the bullpen was already kind of clogged for him. And I think he was out of options. So it would have been difficult for him to have a spot. So, I mean, that gives him some time there. But, you know, I don't know. You hear pitcher, you hear nerve, and even if they say it's a small deal, it has a tendency not to be.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you see bullpen depth kind of start to fall, I mean, we're already worrying about, you know, Jordan Walden. Now you see Mitch Harris, who, you know, isn't really going to be an overly exciting, you know, pitcher out of the bullpen, but he's one of those guys just kind of comes in there and just he can plug in and he can get some innings going. And you know, he was the guy that took over Wainwright last year and really had a good run before he just kind of started to get hit a little bit. He's got the same old stuff, but he's got another year in the league. He's a guy with a great story, and well, more than that, he's just a guy with depth. So anytime you start losing these kind of small little parts, you're not sure about Walden. You're losing Mitch Harris. So the injuries just need to stop. This is getting kind of ridiculous.
And the guy that I think maybe we need to talk about a little bit, again, all the caveats, but Seth Maness has not looked very good this spring. 9.45 ERA, 14 hits in 6.2 innings. You know, Maness had his struggles last year as well. It just seemed like at times he was, you know, he'd have his occasional time where he'd come in and get the double play, but there were some other games where he just got lit up. You know, is the league starting to figure him out a little bit? Is he going to be, you know, we kind of expect him to be that sixth inning, seventh inning, that guy to come in with a runner on base. Yeah, is he going to be able to do that?
He's also a guy that, you know, he's one of Matheny's favorites. He's a guy who's very flexible in what he can do, but he's also a guy who's going to see him start to get kind of crowded up. You got, you know, Tui Vilala, you got, even when Mitch Harris comes back, when you get guys like Matt Bowman, a guy who can go a couple innings, you know. I mean, he's going to start looking over his shoulder, and he's also a guy that is moving closer to, you know, arbitration, and what is he going to cost the team? So he's a guy that's going to see his role kind of start to get diminished and squeezed a little bit if his performance continues to drop. Now, this depends on what happens in the season. If he goes into the season and starts getting tagged, then that's going to be a pretty quick change, because even though – well, see, first thing is, I mean, he's Matheny's guy. So even if he starts to get tagged, you go – is he going to stay on the team just because of that? But I think Seth Maness really has to be pitching for his job right now.
Yeah, I mean, the bullpen is full. I mean, it really is. And
it's stuffed. Yeah. I mean, because when you don't have relievers, you have one of these starters and kind of both. And, you know, you can't afford to throw guys out there that aren't doing their job.
Maness, I just looked through his game log, 6 times last year, you know, gave up 3 or more runs. Not always were they earned, but that's pretty rough for a guy. I mean, yeah, he made 76 appearances, so you're going to have a blow up here and there, but 6 times of 3 plus runs is pretty rough for a guy that's not pitching more than an inning, if that, usually. He does, you know, obviously he can still do the job, but his ERA last year overall was 4.26, and when your reliever gets to be an ERA in that regard, it's really scary because you don't know how many runs they allowed that didn't get charged to them. Well, I mean, you could probably find it out. They know these things these days, but, you know, at a glance, those are runs, you know, there's some runs that he's allowed for, that were charged to a Wainwright or a Walker or whatever. It's just a little bit scary. I mean, we've always kind of come to rely for, I mean, he's only in his fourth year, but we've already come to rely on Maintenance as being that double play specialist, that guy that can come in and pitch effectively, and it's becoming less of a sure thing when he comes in.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely one of those guys. I mean, who he doesn't really have any overpowering stuff. He relies on location. We saw it happen with Ryan Franklin, where he was a guy that could locate his stuff and be really good for a couple, 2 to 3 seasons. But then eventually, when he couldn't really, when his location wavered, he started getting really hammered and getting hammered fast. So that's something to really look out for when it comes to Maintenance.
Yeah, I mean, the shelf life of a reliever is very, very small. I mean, most any reliever. I mean, closers especially. I think we've been a little bit fortunate with Trevor Rosenthal that he's, you know, not succumbed to that yet, and knock on wood. But Rosenthal, you know, closers seem to have that 2 or 3 years where they can be just flat-out dominant, and then all of a sudden the league figures them out, and they're gone. And Rosenthal hasn't had that yet. But Maintenance is starting to look a little bit more like that maybe he is. And that's a little bit of a scary thing. Because, like, and for him, like you said, there's a lot of arms that can go in that rotation. We're already talking about, you know, hey, what happens if Walden goes on the DL? What happens when he comes back? You know, what about Bowman? You got Lyons in there. You got, you know, lots of guys that can do the job, or at least apparently do the job. And then you've got people like Sokolovic and Tula Lavalla who don't really seem to have a spot right now. If you're not getting the job done, you would like to think, and then like you said, again, one of Matheny's guys, you never know for sure. Mitchell Box could still be here if it wasn't for John Mozeliak. You know, you'd like to think, though, that he would be booted to the side if he can't get the job done, because there are other arms that can.
Definitely. I mean, the bullpen can be one of the biggest strengths of the rotate of the whole team. So you don't want to have a weak link in there. And as much as good as he's been in the past, if Maintenance is not doing it, Tui Valada's a guy that's obviously got a live arm. He offers you something that other hitters haven't really seen, aren't familiar with. So he is definitely one of those guys, especially when the team gets really healthy. You know, when Walden does return and Mitch Harris kind of gets healthy again, you're going to see some, you might see some change in the bullpen ranks as when it comes to roles, when it comes to this team.
So the Cardinals have 5 more games in Jupiter. They have 2 with the Marlins, 1 with the Mets, 1 with the Nationals, 1 with the Yankees. They're finished with games on Thursday. They have Friday and Saturday off before playing in Pittsburgh a week from Sunday to open the season. Now, I'm going to tell you that this is the stupidest thing ever. Well, not the stupidest thing ever, but one of the stupidest things ever. You know, it used to be, and I'm going to, you know, these people that are younger than me are going to be like, you know, I'm going to the get off my lawn scenario, but still, used to be that baseball started in Cincinnati. First game of the year was Cincinnati's game. I mean, the first, you know, first pitch of the season was thrown in Cincinnati. It always has been, because they were the oldest professional team. They were the one, you know, at the big parade. If anybody does opening day in the same realm as the Cardinals, it's Cincinnati. Cincinnati does it upright. And that's because they always had the first game there. Well, you know, I can remember it was 94, maybe, that they had the Sunday night game. They started the Sunday night game. The Cardinals actually played, they may have played the Reds in that game. They definitely played somebody, because I remember Lankford hitting a home run. But you had that game, and that game kind of rotated. So you had that Sunday night game before all the games on Monday. That was kind of iffy. I mean, that was kind of nice, because you had that one featured game, but also it took away from the tradition that they have. Now, this year, we have games like all Sunday afternoon, you have Sunday night, and then you have games starting on Monday. It's like, you know, it's kind of like they've taken opening day and tried to expand it as much as possible, which is a typical sporting event thing. But now the Cardinals, and Dan and I were talking about this before, the Cardinals will play at 12 o'clock Central Time on April 3rd. Then they will have Monday off and not play until Tuesday night at 6:05. That's over 48 hours. It's the longest gap. You know, usually they have a day off. You know, they play on Monday, they'll have the Tuesday off, and they'll play on Wednesday. Okay, sure, whatever. But that gap is huge, especially for some people that, you know, Sunday afternoon, early Sunday afternoon, y'all, like, I'm just getting out of church. I don't know how fast I can get back home to watch the game anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. I would rather see, I mean, there's, if any sport upholds their traditions, and maybe to a fault at times, it's baseball. And, you know, now it just it's kind of like opening day. I mean, the Cardinals haven't opened at home in who knows how long. And I know some of that is because the management has typically requested not to. But, you know, I think they just continue to toss out tradition after tradition at times. We see opening, we see interleague play, we see, you know, continue to talk about the DH in the National League. We see all this stuff. And it would be nice, I think. And again, you know, I'm not saying that because I'm a big, huge Reds fan, although I don't hate them like some people do. But, you know, that was that one thing that, that baseball held on to their history, and they've just kind of shoved it aside.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, everybody's so pumped for the beginning of the season, and then they didn't start, okay, we're going to play one game, then we're going to wait, you know, 60 hours before you play the other one. It's just, it's really kind of a killjoy, because you really, you wait for this moment for almost 4 to 5 months, and you wait all month for the spring training games. Okay, let's get it all started up, start playing real games. And then all of a sudden, they want to slow it down and slow it down. It just really takes you back to where this league wants to make money. They want to spread out the opening games. They want to get on all the networks filled up. It kind of becomes kind of a it's more of a thing for the league and not for the fans, because you know you play that first game on Sunday, then you got to wait a whole 2 days. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of, yeah, it's very aggravating, but I think it's like you said, it's not something that's going
to
change.
No, and you know, to some degree, it takes, opening day is that holiday feel, and the only reason you get a holiday feel on something is because, you know, it's during work, or you're not going to work, or, you know, you're seeing all this excitement and hoopla on a weekday. You know, you're doing it on a Sunday, I mean, that's just another weekend, you know what I'm saying? You lose a little bit of that mystique, I think, by having a Sunday afternoon game. I mean, yeah, it's still opening day, and yeah, it's kind of interesting, but I don't think it's as much fun as when you've taken off work to go, or taken off work to watch, or whatever, or you're, you know, it's part of a different, it doesn't get out of your routine. You know, Monday afternoon baseball is not part of your routine, usually, and I think that's what makes it somewhat makes it special, and so you lose that when you're doing it on the weekend. But, you know, again, you're like you say, they get a chance to show like 3 or 4 games on ESPN that day. They'll show 3 or 4 games on probably ESPN or the MLB Network that next day, show a little bit on Tuesday. I mean, more advertising, more money, and that's always going to be the driving factor for any sports league.
Yeah, definitely. It's always going to be revenue. You know, keeping up with the good old NFL, who basically makes money, makes too much money.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, when the NFL can have a 2-hour special on their schedule, then, I mean, that's...
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. When they basically make a whole weekend out of a draft, or the baseball draft just kind of happens.
Yeah, yeah. And I know baseball's done a little bit of that, too, with, you know, having a night for the first round, and then you just kind of happen after that. But, anyway, I feel like that's losing a little something. I mean, it's just, it used to be, you know, everybody started about the same time, or everybody, you know, and now you're just kind of staggered here and there, and you try to figure out when you can, yeah, maybe more people can go to an opening day on Sunday. I don't, maybe it works that way, but for me, I think it loses something, and we'll see if they feel that way as well. Again, not likely to change. It's likely to be that way from now on, now that they've done it. But it just, I think it's going to lose something. But, you know, I tend to not like it when they start changing stuff. So that's just me. Dan, is there anything else? We seem to have covered quite a bit. Is there anything else that you would like to talk about we haven't covered before you start talking about movies?
Well, you know, I think we've hit it all. I think we've kind of hit the concerns, the injuries, the offense, the fact that we're watching spring training, but it could be, you know, reality in another 10 days. So I think we've covered it. I think we got one of these left before we really officially launch. So I think we're ready to roll.
All right. Well, then let's talk about it. I know you went and saw the little movie that they have, Batman and Superman, and I haven't read your review. I saw where you gave it a 7 out of 10, and that's much better than most critics gave it apparently. What'd you think?
Well, you know, I my review is essentially broken down into good, bad, and ugly. I just kind of try to really give people a real breakdown of what I like, what I didn't like. You know, there's a lot of good in this movie. I mean, the people are going to either go into it not wanting to like it, or they're going to just not want to deal with another Zack Snyder movie. But, you know, Ben Affleck's Batman, as I predicted before, it was really well done. It's Frank Miller's Batman. It's more of a brutal Batman, a guy who just doesn't take any mercy. You know, he's very cynical. He's very mad. And they mix in the plot of the end of the Man of Steel, where Superman and General Zod just destroyed Metropolis. They destroyed a city, and they actually They end up kind of knocking down and destroying one of Bruce Wayne's buildings in the beginning of the movie. It's one of the best parts. What's one of the good? It's one of the best parts of the movie is a sequence where, you know, Ben Affleck's trying to get his Batman's trying to get he's his Bruce Wayne. He's driving through the wreckage, and it's got a very eerie feel. It will remind a lot of people of what they saw on television when 9/11 happened. You know, because he's basically on the ground. He's looking up at Superman fighting Zod, and buildings are falling, and he's talking to his guys in the building. That's very well done. There's a lot of good parts in this movie. You know, Affleck's really good. Jeremy Irons makes him really good. He's kind of more of a tech-savvy Alfred. You know, it's a long movie. That's one of the bad parts about it. It's a long movie. Henry Cavill's Superman, you know, it's not an easy role to play, and it's something that nobody, I don't think, is ever going to do as well as Christopher Reeve did, because Christopher Reeve created two distinct personalities with his Clark Kent and with his Superman, and really with Henry Cavill, it's basically he just puts on the glasses and he's supposed to be Clark Kent, but it's kind of like performance quicksand for an actor. There's not much he can really do. He doesn't have much to play off of. You know, Affleck's Batman. You know, Batman is just it's a gold mine for actors because there's so much to play off of. There's so much angst and guilt. But so I wasn't really too impressed with Cavill's Superman. I mean, he's not really any better or any worse than he was last time. He's kind of overshadowed by Batman, which I think was going to be predicting just because of the way, like I said, it's actor's paradise for Batman. It's kind of actor's quicksand for Superman, anybody who plays him. Wasn't impressed with Lex Luthor. Jesse Eisenberg, they went young, and it was kind of a gamble because they kind of went, you know, it made me really long for Kevin Spacey and, you know, Gene Hackman, guys that just played him with, you know, they're kind of sinister and they're wacky, but they weren't just hyper. Jesse Eisenberg's Lex Luthor is just kind of a hyper, overprivileged kid, and it really kind of drags the movie down because he's really the main villain. You know, when these two guys are done fighting each other, he's the guy that's going to be, you know, forged between them. So it's one of those things where it's just a bad move by the director to bring in a guy like him to try to go in a different direction than from what they've gone, even though the Lex Luthor in both the Superman films is really good. Kevin Spacey did a great job, and so did Gene Hackman. So that's kind of a low part of the movie. I wasn't overly impressed with Wonder Woman. She wasn't bad, but you know, the big fight is a highlight when these guys finally do clash. It's worth the wait. It doesn't happen until about the middle of the movie. But it's an extended scene. It's rock 'em, sock 'em. They destroy a few buildings. You can't really get into a fight in a Zack Snyder film without, you know, some part of the population being destroyed. That's just Zack Snyder for you. He's kind of like a mini Michael Bay when it comes to that. But, you know, for people that really don't like the movie, you're going to have a lot of hardcore comic book guys, because Zack Snyder is a big comic book fan, the director. He's a guy that did, I think, as good as you could have done with bringing this story. You know, Doomsday shows up for a reason. You know, he's kind of the antagonist at the end of the movie that kind of leads into the Justice League. There's a big twist at the end. You know, there's a lot of things that happen. But, I mean, I enjoyed it. I didn't leave thinking I saw something great. I didn't leave and want my money back. I wasn't in, I think there was a lot of discussion to have afterwards about what was good, maybe what would be better if you watched it again on second viewing where you didn't really have the hype. You know, when you see one of these movies like this or Captain America Civil War, there's just a lot of hype, you know. So the first time you see it, you're really just, you know, oh, this is great. You're not really paying attention to some things, and some of the things might sneak past you. But there's a lot of, you know, there's chilling moments in this movie. There's kind of a terrorism act and later on in the first hour that involves Superman, it's kind of comes out of nowhere. It's very well staged. But I like the way that they really involve the collateral damage and the accountability of these heroes they have to kind of face. I mean, people kind of look at Batman in fear, and they look at Superman as a guy who's an alien with so many powers that he could destroy the world while he protects it. I mean, I liked that. They tried to go as hard as they could there, and like I said, the big fight pays off. The way they end it's kind of really well. It'll transition well into Justice League. I don't think they're ever going to be as sharp or just as dynamic as Marvel, because Marvel has just been doing this for so long with their movies, and all their characters are kind of firmly established. They don't have to jam them all into one movie that often. You know, usually you meet their characters before they're all in a movie. A lot of the time here, you're just kind of, you meet these characters and they get about 2 or 3 minutes of the movie, and that's it. You know, with Marvel, you get a whole movie of Thor. You get a whole movie of Iron Man, maybe two, before you see him in the Avengers. So I just think Marvel is doing it better, but it doesn't mean that Warner Brothers' movie here is bad. It's a good time if you go into it with modest expectations. If you go into it expecting another Dark Knight or something great, you're going to be let down. Obviously, people have torn it apart because, you know, it's a big movie. It premiered on 30,000 screens across the world on Friday. So it's definitely going to be something that's going to incite a lot of hard opinion. And it should. It's a big movie. It costs over $250 million to make. It's a summer tentpole film. I enjoyed it like it was a bucket of popcorn. You enjoy it. You'll leave it and you'll want to discuss it afterwards. You want to see what was good, what was bad. But for people that are ripping it apart, I mean, you can't slam them. But for people that are going to be warded off because they're too afraid of what people are saying about it, I think if you're interested in these two guys and you want to see them go up against each other and you're looking forward to the Justice League, then this is a good way to start.
Yeah, it looks like it came in, just checking it up, looks like it came in just shy of $200 million on its opening day, which is good. I mean, it's not Star Wars, but it's good.
that's going to be hard to top.
Yeah, tops that. Not anytime soon. But, yeah, I mean, like I said, I never saw Man of Steel. And the criticisms I read of it, and it doesn't sound like anything has changed in this, and maybe I'm wrong, but it's just the fact, one, like you said, it's crammed in. You know, the Marvel Universe didn't start with the Avengers. It started with five or six movies beforehand. This is kind of starting, even though it's just Batman and Superman, and you toss in Wonder Woman, you know, what, you got the Flash promo cameo, you've got Aquaman a cameo, you kind of hint at them, and it's not necessarily a chance to build a straight up like they have in Marvel, but it's also the dark and gritty, which is for some people good, for some people not as much. I mean, they'd like a little bit more humor, a little bit more light. They'd like to actually be able to see the characters, from what I can tell. You know, like I said, I've seen the trailers, and it's a whole lot of dark there.
It's pretty much there's a lot of dark. There's a couple scenes in the light. There's a really pivotal scene in the light, but it's inside, so it doesn't matter. Yeah. So yeah, it's a lot of it must be. I mean, they must just really shot the whole thing at night because they definitely didn't like dark. It was definitely a Batman home field.
Yeah. So again, I'm sure it'll do well. It'll be interesting to see. You know, like I said, a lot of criticisms. You know, a lot of people seem to like it too. Although it's not professional criticism, I know that the Rotten Tomatoes had it about 30%.
Rotten Tomatoes is tearing it apart.
Yeah. And so we'll see how that affects. I know they're starting Justice League filming. I think they already have, if they haven't, or are about to.
I think it's going to start in April as far as at least principal photography. Yeah. So, yeah, that's going to be firing up soon. That comes out in November of next year. Yeah. So
I think the only thing that could affect this is if it doesn't do well, you start looking at maybe, will they make the Aquaman movie? Will they make the Flash movie? You know, Justice League Part 1 and 2 are going to be made. But
yeah, definitely.
You know, do you make those individual ones, or do you retool and look at it a little differently?
I don't know. I mean, I would almost think that a Superman movie would be out of the question if this does bad, because then it's just like, okay, Batman, you know, Batman does well. Superman, if he's around at all, doesn't do well.
Yeah.
But Aquaman is actually, that's got James Wan. They're actually starting it up. So that one's going to be going. And I'm really interested because I really love Jason Momoa. And you get a brief glimpse of him in this movie. There's not a lot of Aquaman screen time, but it does make you really like what they're doing there. James Wan has already said that's going to be more of a lighter, maybe potentially like, you know, Iron Man kind of light story that's not going to be as dark as Batman vs. Superman. I mean, I just think that people, they kind of wanted maybe a lighter Batman and Superman. We've seen the dark with Man of Steel. You've seen the darkness with Dark Knight and Christopher Nolan, the very serious themes. I think people really wanted, you know, maybe just more of a lighter movie, not really very light, but just kind of more of a fun time. These guys are very, like, you know, sad and depressed and mad. It's kind of a movie you're just going to kind of go in and go, man, you might leave angry just because they're so mad.
Yeah, and that's not, I mean, with Iron Man and even Captain America, and none of those have been too dark and depressing. I mean, except for the fact, you know, match of collateral damage in New York. It's kind of a good mixture, though.
It's right. A good balance, you know, like, I think Civil War might be the most serious film yet, just because it's pitting them against each other. But you know, what Batman Superman does, and this is a fair criticism, that it's very serious. I mean, these guys are just kind of, and there's parts of the movie that it could have used some editing. It just it kind of lags on for some sequences, but it's very serious. I mean, you go in this movie, you're just like, okay, he's mad. It's always dark. Buildings are falling. He's mad, and you know, nobody's happy. So really, I mean, I like that James Wan's going to do that with him. James Wan did, you know, he's done the Conjuring. He did the last Fast and Furious. He's done a large amount of movies. He even did a small Kevin Bacon film called Death Sentence that I really liked. So if he's telling me it's going to be light, more of a lighter atmosphere, and with a big, larger than life presence like Jason Momoa playing Aquaman, that should be a very welcoming thing, especially for DC to mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, like I said, and what I've enjoyed with DC, as I've said many a times, is the TV shows. Interesting. It's going to be fun. I think, and that's one thing, is they have a lighter tone. Not Arrow necessarily, but Flash and Supergirl have the lighter tone. And they meet this week. This is going to be fun because tomorrow night's Monday night's the crossover where the Flash winds up in another dimension where Supergirl is. And that I've seen some clips. It looks like that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. But, you know, like I said, I think there's a reason that they moved, you know, there was Batman and Superman was supposed to be in May. And then Marvel said, oh, we're going to put Civil War right there. And DC blinked, and there's probably a reason.
That's it. I mean, I just think, yeah, Marvel, they have all their phases planned out. Mm-hmm. And it's like we both point out that they developed these characters in solo films before they shoved them into a movie. And, you know, DC, I think DC, when they want to admit that, they're really just trying to go up against that. They're trying to offer their own thing, but also trying to take away a little bit of what they're doing. And it's a big time competition. I mean, it's just, you know, you have a different groups of superheroes, but also just, you know, there's only a certain amount of the year that you can release these movies to get that big box office.
Yeah, that's true. Anything else out there coming up that you're interested in?
You know, I watched Cloverfield Lane earlier this week, and that was, if you don't like superheroes, mad, depressed superheroes fighting in tights and destroying cities, 10 Cloverfield Lane is a good old-fashioned thriller, sci-fi, kind of horror film. It plays out kind of like a stage play. It's one location. You know, John Goodman, he's got, you know, Mary Elizabeth Winstead's character kind of locked in a basement in a bunker, and he's telling her that, you know, there's something outside that she can't leave. And, you know, it's a high wire act, but it's very well played. It's very well acted. It's just something different. Like if you think you know what you're going to get with Batman Superman, you have no idea what you're going to get with this 10 Cloverfield Lane. It's J.J. Abrams who produced the first film, Cloverfield, and this one is called 10 Cloverfield Lane. It's kind of a semi-sequel, not really connected, but kind of in the same world. But it's very eerie. It combines, you know, it's kind of an old-fashioned thriller, but it's also got some new stuff to it. You think you know where it's going, and it kind of redirects you. There's some good twists in there, but that's a good alternative if you don't like the Bat and the Supes. But next week, there's a movie with Kevin Costner coming out. It's called Criminal. It looks like a good old action thriller. He plays a guy who is basically a career kind of criminal bad guy, and they put somebody else's, I guess, DNA or whatever into him in order for him to track down a lead on a guy that he snuffed out. It looks like one of those good espionage thrillers with Gary Oldman and Tommy Lee Jones. And then the next week there's Jake Gyllenhaal in a movie called Demolition. So you kind of getting a little bit of a box office more and also some independent films. So I'm kind of looking forward to a mixture in April of more of a mainstream film and independent before that little Marvel film comes out on May 6th.
Yeah, that's going to be fun, not only because it's going to be a fun movie, but most likely the Star Wars Rogue One trailer will come out there.
Definitely.
Look at that. So
it's going to be huge.
Yep, should be. All right, well, we've done enough damage for one night, I think. Hope you've enjoyed. Hope you're still with us. And we will be back probably, you know, Thursday, Friday of this coming week. Get a last look at spring training, get prepared for the 2016 season to start on a week from Sunday. So, for Mr. Buffa, I'm Mr. Shopdog. We'll talk at you later.
Thanks for listening to The Best Dance in Baseball. We'd love to have your feedback on the show. Email us at bestdanceinbaseball@gmail.com. Dan Buffa can be found on Twitter @Buffa82, Daniel Shopdog @C70. The show's Twitter handle is BestDan, BASEBAL1. You can also find us on Facebook under Best Dance in Baseball.